This week, my conversation with U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, about her trip to Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea-Bissau, as well as her reaction to the International Court of Justice ruling on Israel and Gaza. And Rama Yade from the Atlantic Council joins us to talk about U.S. foreign policy toward Africa in a pivotal election year and amid geopolitical headwinds. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Haley Adams. It is great to be with you. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, recently visited three West African nations, Guinea-Bissau, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Her visit came amid political headwinds and significant changes in the region. The ambassador spoke to me from VOA's United Nations studios and told me why she visited these countries at this time. Madam Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, thank you so very much for always giving us your time here on Straight Talk Africa and taking time out to speak to our African audiences. We really appreciate it. Ma'am, you've traveled to Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea-Bissau. There's a new president in Liberia, an attempted coup in Sierra Leone in recent months, and of course, there was political unrest in Guinea-Bissau in December. Did some of these factors play into why you visited those particular countries? And can you tell us more about the conversations you've had with the leaders of those countries?
Well, absolutely. First and foremost, the reason for my trip was to lead the presidential delegation to Liberia's inauguration and reaffirm our strong commitment to the people of Liberia, congratulate them on an extraordinarily successful election, congratulate President Boakai, and also congratulate President Weah for graciously accepting the results of the election and being part of a smooth transition from one administration to another. Sierra Leone, I visited for a number of reasons, but Sierra Leone, as you know, just joined the Security Council as an elected member. And as part of my own engagement with members of the Security Council, when there are new elected members of the Council, I try to make a visit to those countries and engage with them on their priorities on the Council, our priorities on the Council. But also, as you know, Sierra Leone did have an attempted coup, to condemn that attempt, but also work with the government to discuss their actions moving forward, including this commission that they've set up that will be reviewing the election, the electoral process, and that seems to be going extraordinarily well. And finally, Guinea-Bissau, I'm going backward. I started in Guinea-Bissau, but I had engagement directly with the president on the situation on the ground there, encouraging his continued support for a democratic process moving forward, having elections as soon as possible that will allow the country's parliament to get back into operation and help this country as it struggles as a democracy.
Ambassador, I want to ask you about news from West Africa over the weekend. Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger quitting the Economic Community of West African States. Now, these are founding members of ECOWAS. The bloc was, of course, also founded on these ideas of integration and regional cooperation. But if you look at the trends of successive coups in parts of West Africa, is ECOWAS at risk of falling apart?
You know, ECOWAS has historically been a strong regional organization in West Africa. They played a pivotal role in ending the civil wars in both Liberia and Sierra Leone. And they have played a strong role in bringing the countries of West Africa together on economic migration and other issues. The decisions made by Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali is really, that decision is really unfortunate because it further isolates them from their neighborhood. It isolates them from other democracies in the region. And it shows that the actions that they are taking are actions that are only in their interests, but not in the interests of the people of these three countries. So again, I think this is unfortunate. I think ECOWAS will remain strong. It will continue to address issues across the board. And I hope at some point that they can convince these three countries to come back into the fold. Being outside the fold is not in their interest, and it's not in the interest of their people.
Madam, I also want to get your comment on Friday's interim ruling by the International Court of Justice in The Hague, in that case brought by South Africa against Israel. Now, of course, the court cannot enforce this ruling. It is merely symbolic. But will the United States tell Israel to comply with the ICJ's ruling?
Look, we have worked closely with the Israeli government on these issues, that they continue to work to improve their efforts to protect civilians in their effort to defend their own territory. So we support their rights to defense, but we've also discouraged them or encouraged them to pay closer attention to civilian casualties and to pay closer attention to international humanitarian law. And this is something that is a message that has come from the top of the U.S. government in all of our engagements with the Israelis. We are broadly supportive of the International Court of Justice, and their ruling is, as you said, an interim ruling, and they will continue to discuss these issues moving forward. We will continue to work with the Israelis to address the concerns that were raised.
Do you see the ICJ ruling as a rebuke of Israel? And will the United States continue unwavering support for Israel, no matter what and no matter how long it takes?
We have unwavering support for Israel's right to defend itself against the brutal attacks that Hamas carried out on October 7th, and that they have indicated they will do again if they have the opportunity. So we have been clear in our support for Israel's right of self-defense, but we've also made clear that Israel has to honor international humanitarian law. They have to honor the laws of war.
Madam Ambassador, there's also news in recent days about the US, Britain, Germany, Australia and other countries pausing funding to the UN Relief Works and Works Agency for Palestinian refugees in the Near East. Israel accuses some of their staff of terrorism for involvement in the October 7th attacks. How much money is being put on hold, ma'am? And what now about the 2 million people in Gaza who depend on this agency for their survival and who, according to the UN, are facing famine in coming months?
Look, what the report of members of UNRWA, 12 members of UNRWA's staff engaging in the horrific attacks on Israel on October 7th were really, really horrific. They are unacceptable. And we have supported the UN's decision to relieve these people of their connections with UNRWA. And we are supporting their efforts to further investigate this situation. They came to us with this information early on, and we made the decision that it was important that we react in an appropriate way. We are UNRWA's largest funder. We will continue to work with the UN to find ways to provide humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. And we will continue to have our people on the ground every single day working to ensure that that assistance is delivered to people on the ground. This is a temporary pause. We're waiting for the results of the final investigation by the UN and their review of UNRWA's work in the region. And we will continue to work with the UN as they provide support to Palestinian refugees who are living in Jordan, living in Syria, and living in Lebanon. So our commitment to humanitarian assistance is ironclad, but we felt it was important that we send this strong message to UNRWA while this investigation continues to develop additional information.
And ma'am, will this funding affect any pledges that were made for 2024? I know there is talk of it affecting additional funding, but does that affect any pledges made for this year?
We made some early contributions to UNRWA that I know that they are using, and there are other countries who have made contributions as well. But we will work with the UN as they move forward to find mechanisms to ensure that Palestinians continue to get the needed assistance, the needed life-saving assistance that that the UN has been providing.
Ma'am, I want to return to politics around U.S. politics and, of course, how it affects international relationships. The Biden administration this year reiterated that it's all in on Africa's future. But what commitments and promises can the U.S. really make to African countries when it is in an election year?
Look, I can speak for the Biden administration, and our commitment to Africa is ironclad. The fact that two cabinet officials were on the continent of Africa at the same time last week, promoting our relationships, but also affirming our commitments to these countries, I think was a very, very strong message. We will continue to work with African countries to address their needs across the board. The U.S. has continuously been a large humanitarian development as well as security contributor to the people of Africa. I would expect that that will continue, but I can't speak for if there's a change of administration. We're working to continue our commitments as the president made, and hopefully this will continue as the president assumes a second administration or if there's a change of administration.
Oh, one final question, ma'am. Are you hearing anything about whether President Joe Biden will make a trip to Africa in this year?
You know, I can't comment on the president's travel schedule. I know that he is committed to maintaining our close relationships with Africans across the board. And the White House will determine what his travel schedule will be like or what engagements he will have over the course of this year.
And that was U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, speaking to me there from VOA Studios in New York. We're going to take a short break here. And when we come back, Ambassador Rama Yade from the Atlantic Council is here with us to talk about U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's latest trip to the African continent amid shifting sands across West Africa. We'll be right back.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty. Medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus, Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lynn Ahmadou, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in
with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. It's been a busy few weeks for some of America's top diplomats as they toured the African continent. Why the high-profile visits to the region? Why now? U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken recently wrapped up a four-country Africa tour amid concerns about stability in the Sahel sub-region of West Africa, following several coups there since 2020. VOA Cindy Sain has more.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken wrapped up his tour of Africa Thursday, saying the U.S. seeks more common ground and a shared future with democratic countries on the continent, including Angola.
At the White House in November, President Biden reaffirmed to President Lorenzo that this is a historic moment for the partnership between the United States and Angola. Our relationship is stronger, it's more consequential, it's farther reaching than in any point in our 30-year friendship. And at this transformational moment, President Biden asked me to come to Luanda to help build on and accelerate our progress.
In Angola's capital, Blinken reviewed what he said was faster than expected work on the Lobito Corridor Railway, connecting the country with the Democratic Republic of Congo and Zambia. It is the most ambitious U.S. infrastructure project on a continent where China has long been engaged in similar massive endeavors, says Africa expert Terry McCulley with the United States Institute of Peace.
The U.S. is investing significantly in Angola. The Lobito Corridor project, which will link Angola to DRC and Zambia, is the largest U.S. public investment in Africa in decades. And I think that's a signal that the U.S. wants to be engaged and a strong partner of African countries.
McCulley says the United States aims to show that it is a long-term partner at a time when Russia is ramping up its security ties with military-run states in Africa and China is expanding its footprint through investment in infrastructure.
You see a resurgence in Russian efforts to influence in Africa, particularly through disinformation campaigns. China obviously is a very important player on the African continent. And let's be honest, the Africans value that relationship because China and Chinese companies have contributed a lot to the infrastructure projects that are essential for development.
Asked about partnering with the U.S. as opposed to Russia and China, Angola's foreign minister, Tete Antonio, had a diplomatic answer, saying the best friend is the one that tells the truth. Blinken also praised Angola's peace efforts on the continent.
Angola is trusted by all sides. President Lorenzo's leadership is vital for a breakthrough.
President Joe Biden has said he is eager to visit Africa, but Blinken noted that the U.S. election imposes time constraints on him this year. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Well, let's delve deeper into the U.S. Secretary of State's Africa tour, as well as the state of U.S.-Africa relations. My guest this week is Ambassador Rama Iyade. She's a senior director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council. She's also the former French Secretary of Human Rights. Ambassador, a warm welcome to you. Always great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
The U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, as we of course saw there, visited Cape Verde, Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria, and Angola. And this is, of course, his first trip by the U.S. Secretary of State since war broke out in the Middle East. He's been obviously largely focused there. But Ambassador, can you tell us how important you think this trip was for him to make to these countries at this time?
Yeah, it was not the first trip from Secretary Blinken on the African continent, of course. But this trip has one goal, to speak to African hearts. You know, it was a statement of love, knowing that President Biden, who was expected to travel on the continent, has still not organized this trip. So it was important for that first reason. The second reason why it was important for Secretary Blinken to go to Africa is that it was important to show that despite the wars in Gaza and in Ukraine, Africa still matters. And this year has been a good opportunity for the U.S. since the U.S.-Africa Summit of December 2022 to show the importance or the level of commitment they have. 17 high-profile officials from the U.S. traveled to 23 African countries during the past year. And remember that in 2022, at the U.S.-Africa Summit, the U.S. announced $55 billion of investment over the next 3 years. So it was a way to confirm. But, of course, Africans don't forget that this pledge from President Biden to travel there. It was something he claimed as a difference from his predecessor, who never traveled on the continent.
I want to get into the sort of the dynamics here in the United States, how that affects Africa. But I want to quickly turn to the story that had been making headline in recent days, this news that Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso had decided to quit the Economic Community of West African States. Now, of course, they were founding members of ECOWAS. And I'd like to put to you the same question I put to Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. Is ECOWAS at risk here of falling apart?
You know, ECOWAS is an old organization, African organization, regional, of course. It has been launched in 1975, 15 members. It's an economic regional organization, you know, a free trade area. They decided to abolish the non-tariff barriers and to decrease the custom duties so that it can boost the imports and exports in the region. So this makes sense. And this organization has evolved over the years, securing the region, because you cannot boost trade without peace, without security, and without stability. And that's why after the coup series in these past months in Africa, ECOWAS, especially after Niger, ECOWAS, under President of Nigeria's leadership, decided that they would provoke a military intervention to restore the previous constitutional order in Niger. President Bazoum has been deposed, you remember. But this military intervention did not happen because it was too risky, so many resistance. And it hurt a lot, the ECOWAS and its credibility on the Pan-African stage. So the ECOWAS was already in a bad shape, in a difficult situation, and now these three countries decide to walk away. It's a tough decision for ECOWAS, and people are asking questions about the future of this organization, and that's maybe why the ECOWAS leaders think that it's still time to negotiate something. It's still time to see if an alternative could be found to avoid that the ECOWAS collapses. That's something important. But in the meantime, I mean, these three countries, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali, they are not in a situation of confidence or trust for each other, because it's very complicated at three countries to build a new organization, you know, for trade, for security, and the populations can suffer from the reduction of the free movement of goods and capitals. So this will impact these economies, even if these countries have an important stock of resources, this is not enough to ensure prosperity for these three countries.
I'd like to move on to U.S. politics. Again, of course, as we've been discussing here on the show, it's a pivotal election here in the United States and in several African countries as well. But some of the headlines that came out of the recent World Economic Forum in Davos was that there were discussions about how European countries are already starting to prepare and how they feel they should prepare for a possible change in administration here in the United States, for a possible return of former President Donald Trump to the White House. Is it your view that African countries should do the same?
What we hear and heard at the World Economic Forum is that many African leaders are worried about this period of transition in the U.S. politics because they don't know what will happen tomorrow. We pretty know what would happen with this administration if they are renewed, you know. But the new administration with the former president coming back, it's an unknown situation for them. Or maybe they know the situation too much because they had experience, you know, the anti-Muslim ban. The president never traveled to the continent either, and the continent did not seem to be a priority. So they need to be reassured that of a U.S. commitment with this administration or another one. This is something that is important because the continent itself is in a transition period as well. Right. And it's not the time for breaking this relationship that is very important. 25% of the humanity will be African in less than 30 years. It's a demographic revolution, first. Two, even this year, in 2024, economically speaking, six African economies are the most dynamic in the world. This means something too. The continent is also experiencing these political transitions, you know, with this coup series that happened. So Africans need a strong American partner. And after this administration proposed with these love statements we had throughout the years, now Africans are waiting for the ring because they need proofs of that love. So there are many, many initiatives right now, but I think they want to know where we are going in a context of strong global power competition.
And since we're talking about these relationship metaphors, we've got about 2 minutes left. Can you just briefly give me your assessment of the state of the relationship between the United States and some African countries? We know there have been tensions between the U.S. and South Africa in particular, but what are the countries where the U.S. has actually strengthened ties, and where would you say has the U.S. kind of have ties weakened?
I think the what I saw from these past years from this administration is maybe more commitment in West Africa and in Francophone countries. That is something that is pretty new. We saw a bold move on Niger when France has been ousted from Niger. The U.S. didn't want to leave and even sent a new ambassador to Niger. So this is something interesting. I think that We still need to have a guideline about this U.S. policy to Africa. There are many, many project initiatives, like the renewal of AGOA, as President Biden promised that. You have the Lobito Corridor Atlantic Railway, we just mentioned right now, a few minutes ago, in Angola. You have also all these investments announced on security and training and security by Secretary Blinken. You have the digital transformation with Africa and many, many initiatives like this. But what is the key guideline of this policy that is a pending question in a context of like I said, of a stronger competition between global but also regional powers? Countries like Emirates, Saudi Arabia are more and more involved on the continent. This is the continent in transition, but also at work.
Ambassador, I could talk to you all day, and I do hope that you will come back and talk to us. Thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. That was Ambassador Rama Iyade. She's the Senior Director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council here in Washington. Ma'am, thank you so much. And that is our show this week. Thank you for being with us on television, radio, and online, and for always watching, for always listening. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.